from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning and welcome to the G and Ursula Show. We are going to go live to Washington, D.C. right now because the committee investigating the January 6th attack in the U.S. Capitol has rushed back for a surprise hearing featuring a witness who had unique access to the White House. It's Cassidy Hutchison, the former executive assistant to Mark Meadows. And right now, Republican Representative Liz Cheney is speaking. She is the co-chair of this committee, and we're going to join here right now.
Thank you for her cooperation and for her courage. We will cover certain but not all relevant topics within Ms. Hutchison's knowledge today. Again, our future hearings will supply greater detail, putting the testimony today in a broader and more complete context. Today, you will hear Ms. Hutchison relate certain firsthand observations of President Trump's conduct on January 6th. You will also hear new information regarding the actions and statements of Mr. Trump's senior advisors that day, including his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and his White House counsel. And we will begin to examine evidence bearing on what President Trump and members of the White House staff knew about the prospect for violence on January 6th, even before that violence began. To best communicate the information the committee has gathered, we will follow the practice of our recent hearings, playing videotaped testimony from Ms. Hutchison and others, and also posing questions to Ms. Hutchison live. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Thank you very much. Our witness today is Ms. Cassie Hutchison, who served in the Trump administration in the White House Office of Legislative Affairs from 2019 to 2020, and as a special assistant to the President in the White House Chief of Staff's office from March 2020 through January 2021. I will now swear in our witness. The witness will please stand and raise her right hand. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. You may be seated. Let the record reflect the witness answered in the affirmative. I now recognize myself for questions. Ms. Hutchison, I'd like to start with a few questions about your background. These are some photographs we've obtained highlighting your career. These show you with members of Congress, including Steve Scalise, as well as the White House with leader Kevin McCarthy and Jim Jordan. Others show you with the President and members of Congress aboard Air Force One. Before you worked in the White House, you worked on Capitol Hill for Representative Steve Scalise, the Republican whip, and Senator Ted Cruz. And then in 2019, you moved to the White House and served there until the end of the Trump administration in 2020. When you started at the White House, you served in the Office of Legislative Affairs. We understand that you were initially hired as a staff assistant, but was soon promoted to a position of greater responsibility. Can you explain your role for the committee?
When I moved over to the White House Chief of Staff's office with Mr. Meadows when he became the fourth Chief of Staff, it's difficult to describe a typical day. I was a special assistant to the President and an advisor to the Chief of Staff. The days depended on what the President was doing that day, and that's kind of how my portfolio was reflected. I had a lot of outreach with members of Congress, senior cabinet officials. I would work on policy issues with relevant internal components and members on the Hill, as well as security protocol at the White House complex for Mr. Meadows and the President.
And then you received another promotion in March 2020. At that time, you became the principal aide to the new White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows. Is that right?
That's correct, sir.
What did a typical day look like for you in your work with Mr. Meadows?
It varied with what was going on. We spent a lot of time on the Hill. I spent time on the Hill independently, too, as I was his liaison for Capitol Hill. We did a lot of presidential travel engagements, but mostly I was there to serve what the chief of staff needed, and a lot of times what the chief of staff needed was a reflection of what the president's schedule was detailed to do that day.
So is it fair to say that you spoke regularly in your position both with members of Congress and with senior members of the Trump administration?
That's correct. That's a fair assessment, sir.
And would you say that in your work with Mr. Meadows, you are typically in contact with him and others in the White House throughout the day?
That's correct, sir. Mr. Meadows and I were in contact almost pretty much throughout every day, consistently.
Although so much of grave importance happens in the West Wing of the White House, it's quite a small building. Above me on the screen, you can see a map of the first floor of the West Wing of the White House. On the right, you can see the President's Oval Office. On the left, the Chief of Staff's office suite. Within the Chief of Staff's office suite is the heart of the West Wing, was your desk, which was between the Vice President's office, Ms. Kirshner's office, and the Oval Office. Ms. Hutchinson, is this an accurate depiction of where you were located?
It's accurate. It's a lot smaller than it looks.
Absolutely. Ms. Hutchinson, this is a photo that shows the short distance between your office and the President's Oval Office. And it only takes 5 to 10 seconds or so to walk down the hall from your office to the Oval Office. Is that right?
That's correct.
Thank you. Pursuant to the Section 5C8 of House Resolution 503, the chair recognizes gentlewoman from Wyoming, Ms. Cheney, for questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we will begin today with an exchange that first provided Ms. Hutchinson a tangible sense of the ongoing planning for the events of January 6th. On January 2nd, 4 days before the attack on our Capitol, President Trump's lead lawyer, Mr. Giuliani, was meeting with White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and others. Ms. Hutchinson, do you remember Mr. Giuliani meeting with Mr. Meadows on January 2nd, 2021?
I do. He met with Mr. Meadows in the evening of January 2nd, 2021.
And we understand that you walked Mr. Giuliani out of the White House that night, and he talked to you about January 6th. What do you remember him saying?
As Mr. Giuliani and I were walking to his vehicles that evening, he looked at me and said something to the effect of, "Cass, are you excited for the 6th? It's going to be a great day." I remember looking at him and saying, "Rudy, could you explain what's happening on the 6th? He had responded something to the effect of, "We're going to the Capitol. It's going to be great. The president's going to be there. He's going to look powerful. He's going to be with the members. He's going to be with the senators. Talk to the chief about it. Talk to the chief about it. He knows about it."
And did you go back then up to the West Wing and tell Mr. Meadows about your conversation with Mr. Giuliani?
I did. After Mr. Giuliani had left the campus that evening, I went back up to our office, and I found Mr. Meadows in his office on the couch. He was scrolling through his phone. I remember leaning against the doorway and saying, "I had an interesting conversation with Rudy, Mark. Sounds like we're going to go to the Capitol." He didn't look up from his phone and said something to the effect of, "There's a lot going on, Cass, but I don't know. Things might get real, real bad on January 6th.
Ms. Hutchinson, Mr. Meadows is engaged in litigation with the committee to try to avoid testifying here. What was your reaction when he said to you things might get real, real bad?
In the days before January 2nd, I was apprehensive about the 6th. I had heard general plans for a rally. I had heard tentative movements to potentially go to the Capitol. But when hearing Rudy's take on January 6th and then Mark's response, that evening was the first moment that I remember feeling scared and nervous for what could happen on January 6th. And I had a deeper concern for what was happening with the planning aspects of it.
Thank you, Ms. Hutchinson. Today, we're going to be focusing primarily on the events of January 5th and 6th at the White House. But to begin and to frame the discussion, I want to talk about a conversation that you had with Mr. John Ratcliffe, the Director of National Intelligence. And you had this conversation in December of 2020. Mr. Ratcliffe was nominated by President Trump to oversee U.S. intelligence, our U.S. intelligence community. And before his appointment, Mr. Ratcliffe was a Republican member of Congress. As you will see on this clip, Director Ratcliffe's comments in December of 2020 were prescient.
My understanding was Director Ratcliffe didn't want much to do with the post-election period. Director Ratcliffe felt that it wasn't something that the White House should be pursuing. It felt it was dangerous for the president's legacy. He had expressed to me that he was concerned that it could spiral out of control and potentially be dangerous, either in, for our democracy or the way that things were going for the six.
When you say it wasn't something the White House should be pursuing, what's the it?
Trying to fight the results of the election, fighting missing ballots, pressuring filing lawsuits in certain states where there didn't seem to be significant evidence, and reaching out to state legislatures about that. So pretty much the way that the White House was handling the post-election period, he felt that there could be dangerous repercussions in terms of precedent set for elections, for our democracy, for the six. You know, he was hoping that we would concede.
So, Ms. Hutchinson, now we're going to turn to certain information that was available before January 4th and what the Trump administration and the president knew about the potential for violence before January 6th. On the screen, you will see an email received by Acting Deputy Attorney General Donahue on January 4th from the National Security Division of the Department of Justice. Mr. Donahue testified in our hearings last week. The email identifies apparent planning by those coming to Washington on January 6th to, quote, occupy federal buildings and discussions of, quote, invading the Capitol building. Here's what Mr. Donahue said to us.
And we knew that if you have tens of thousands of very obsessive people showing up in Washington, D.C., that there was potential for violence.
U.S. Secret Service was looking at similar information and watching the planned demonstrations. In fact, their intelligence division sent several emails to White House personnel, like Deputy Chief of Staff Tony Ornato and the head of the President's Protective Detail, Robert Engel, including certain materials listing events like those on the screen. The White House continued to receive updates about planned demonstrations, including information regarding the Proud Boys organizing and planning to attend events on January 6th. Although Ms. Hutchinson has no detailed knowledge of any planning involving the Proud Boys for January 6th, she did note this.
I recall hearing the word Oath Keeper and hearing the word Proud Boys closer to the planning of the January 6th rally when Mr. Giuliani would be around.
On January 3rd, the Capitol Police issued a special event assessment. In that document, the Capitol Police noted that the Proud Boys and other groups planned to be in Washington, D.C. on January 6th and indicated that, quote, unlike previous post-election protests, the targets of the pro-Trump supporters are not necessarily the counter-protesters as they were previously, but rather Congress itself is the target on the 6th. Of course, we all know now that the Proud Boys showed up on January 6th, marched from the Washington Monument to the Capitol that day, and led the riotous mob to invade and occupy our Capitol. Ms. Hutchinson, I want to play you a clip of one of our meetings when you described a call on January 4th that you received from National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien on the same topic, potential violence on January 6th.
I received a call from Robert O'Brien, the National Security Advisor. He had asked if he could speak with Mr. Meadows about potential violent words of violence that he was hearing that were potentially going to happen on the Hill on January 6th. I had asked if he had connected with Tony Ornato, because Tony Ornato had a conversation with him, with Mark, about that topic. Robert had said, I'll talk to Tony, and then I don't know if Robert ever connected with Mark about the issue.
Ms. Hutchinson, can you describe for us Mr. Ornato's responsibilities as Deputy Chief of Staff?
The Deputy Chief of Staff position at the White House for operations is arguably one of the most important positions that somebody can hold. They're in charge of all security protocol for the campus and all presidential protectees, primarily the president and the first family, but anything that requires security for any individual that has presidential protection, so the chief of staff or the national security advisor, as well as the vice president's team too. Tony would oversee all of that, and he was the conduit for security protocol between White House staff and the United States Secret Service.
Thank you. And you also described a brief meeting between Mr. Ornato and Mr. Meadows on the potential for violence. The meeting was on January 4th. They were talking about the potential for violence on January 6th. Let's listen to a clip of that testimony.
I remember Mr. Ornato had talked to him about intelligence reports. I remember Mr. Ornato coming in and saying that we had intel reports saying that there could potentially be violence.
You have been listening to the testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson. She is the former senior aide to Chief of Staff Mark Meadows during the President Trump administration, and they're talking about the days leading up to January 6th. We are going to continue monitoring what is going on in this hearing today, which was pretty much a surprise hearing because she has come forward as a witness with new information. We will be taking a CBS update coming up at 10:31, and we'll have further discussion about this and bring you any new details. Stay with us. This is the Gian Ursula Show. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Jack Stein from Cairo Nights is in with me. And you just heard live from Washington, D.C., some of the testimony from this ex-White House aide who worked for former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows for months. And she talked about a conversation that she had with Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani on January 2nd. And he had asked her about whether she was excited about what was going to happen on January 6th. And it was going to be a great day. That was a quote from him, and talked about that they were going to be going to the Capitol, and the president was going to look powerful. That is what she is testifying. She also testified while we were away during a commercial break. She testified that former President Trump knew that there were going to be weapons at the rally preceding that attack on January 6th. So again, we will continue to monitor what is going on. But we wanted to bring in a guest, Jack, and Chris Sullivan, otherwise known as Sully, is always fun to have on the show. And Sully, you're going to talk to us about how much more we're going to be paying to drive around the Puget Sound region.
Yeah, I am. I'm coming in to bring you nothing but good news. I know how much you love good news.
I love good news.
And that's what I'm, starting Friday, they're going to be, July 1st is always a very important day in the state of Washington, because a lot of the rules that the legislature passes in their session start on January or on July 1st. That's one of the dates. And in this case, it is licensing fees are going up as part of the $17 billion transportation package that they pushed through this year. A lot of the fees when it comes to license plates, we're not talking registrations here. So like if you need a new license plate, you need a replacement, you want to buy a Sounders or a Seahawks plate, you need to do the same thing for your motorcycle. Those are all going up significant amounts. Like a replacement plate plate right now is $10. It's going up to 30. You need a new plate, it's going from like, you know, 15 to 50. So these are, I mean, they're all when you're buying a car, so what's another $30 on top of a, you know, $20,000 price? But every little bit right now, especially, can hurt, and it just adds to the pile, right, of what you have to pay. So those are all going forward on Friday. The toll is going up on the 99 tunnel through Seattle on Friday as well. That was passed earlier this by the Washington State Transportation Commission, not the legislature, and that's to make up for a lack of pandemic drivers. So they need to, you know, bake that in order to cover the bonds. It was one of those things that they were going to default if they didn't do that. Same thing with 520, though the increases on 520 are not going to go into effect until next July 1st. So it's a day where the tax man gets a few extra bucks from you.
So what is the logic, though? Because fewer people were driving and they lost money, so let's go ahead and jack up the prices.
Well, that is because the way that the bonds are written and the way that these projects are supported and funded is that certain amount of the money to repay that debt has to come from tolling. That's the way they set up the 520. That's the way they set up I-90. Or 99, excuse me, the 99 tunnel. There's so many different numbers. Sorry, the tunnel through Seattle. Big Bertha, you know, the pipe, the whole deal.
I finally used that tunnel once.
Yeah, what do you think of it?
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
don't you like
no,
the little
no
pictures
graffiti
of the
yet.
Stick, stick
like
figures
that.
Inside to tell you where to walk to when the tunnel fails?
Yes.
But it's one of those things where they're financially responsible for putting the money back into the funds. So they need to raise the fees in order to make that happen. It's what we've seen for decades with the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. And we talked about that last, well, you were out last week, but we talked about they're actually getting a 75-cent reduction. Ooh. In the Tacoma Narrows Bridge starting in October because they got some money from the legislature to help pay down some of that debt. So, yeah, it's just the way that things are funded in this state that are reliant in some way to pay back the bonds with toll revenue. And if they didn't get a lot during the pandemic, they got to get it back. And that's with a toll increase. There's going to be another toll increase next July on the tunnel as well. So they're just kind of baked in order to meet their financial obligations.
I have nothing to add to this.
Come on, Jack Stein.
Okay, but
come on, Jack Stein.
So what are we getting? having to pay more. I just went to the licensing department.
Yeah.
DOL, yeah. Well, and it was up in Shoreline, so I don't even know if it was officially DOL. But I was helping my mom get a new driver's license.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, that was the fastest I've ever gone through a line.
Well, you know what they've done is they've added a whole bunch of more. Did you make an appointment?
No.
Okay.
I walked
well, see,
right
they,
in.
They've stood up an appointment system during the pandemic to help them be a little bit more responsive, which has kind of helped the wait times a little bit as well. So that's actually a benefit. You can do more things online that you couldn't do before that you had to go in and take care of. So that has taken some of the pressure off. So, well, I'm glad to hear that you got through the line. By the way, your license is actually going up too, your driver's license, but that is not going up July 1st. That's coming later in the year. So is the enhanced driver's license, which, by the way, you will need next year for the Real ID Act in order to fly anywhere. You need to get that enhanced driver's license.
Okay, so I want to ask you about that too, though, because a lot of people, because it's been delayed so many times, people
only
don't realize.
15 years.
So do we all need it?
Yeah.
We all need
in order
it.
To fly domestically starting May 3rd of next year, unless it gets postponed again, which it has for the last decade. Let's not forget George Bush, President Bush, signed this into law in 2005. And here's one of the things that's interesting. Not all states are complying with the Real ID Act. Washington is not, because they don't like making people give information to get a driver's license.
What are we doing here? So, listening right now, what should we be doing if we want to continue traveling domestically or internationally?
Make sure your passport is up to date.
Okay.
Okay. Get an enhanced driver's license. See, that's the thing.
Do that online?
Yeah. No. An enhanced driver's license requires a visit because you have got documentation to go over. You should make an appointment for one of those at the DOL. But what's interesting is we have that idea of we don't want to take as much personal information to give you a driver's license or an ID card. That's a separate issue. But that means that they had to create this extra thing, which costs an extra amount of money, called an enhanced driver's license. Matter of fact, Holly, my wife, we tried to get one, but for her, but she ran into trouble with the name change when we got married 25 years ago. So we're having to dive into Multnomah County records in Portland to try to make sure we get the right document. So don't wait on this.
So can does a passport, though, work
in
the place?
Certainly.
So if you have a passport,
you're
you don't
good.
Need to worry about enhanced ID.
No. But if you don't have a passport and you want to just get an enhanced driver's license, it might be a little faster than getting a passport, depending on where you are. But the month, it's a 10-month deadline. And this is to fly anywhere. I mean, if you want to catch a flight to Spokane, you're going to need a real ID, an enhanced driver's license, starting next May in order to pass through TSA, or it doesn't count as proper documentation.
Time to get going on that, though.
Yeah, I mean, let's not. Yeah. And will it get postponed? Probably. I mean, it keeps getting postponed, but I wouldn't count on it. I'd get one. And right now, you can get one from Washington. They're up to 8 years now. They've extended the amount of years you can get your license and how long it's good for. So
appreciate it.
Yeah,
I don't like to hear.
Jack asks a lot more tough questions on the night show.
Sorry.
Jack, come on. Are you working the night show tonight? Yeah. Come on, call me later.
Which during the break, Chris told me that you've cleaned up your act a lot for this show.
Jack's very different at night.
Yeah, Jack and I get a little more fired up on the night show when things get a little loosey-goosey.
This is, I do nothing but G-rated radio 24/7.
I love it.
I've never said
anything. I didn't say it wasn't
out of
G-rated.
Step.
I'm just saying we get a little loosey-goosey.
Sully, thank you.
Yeah. All right, guys, take care.
Okay, we're going to try to solve other people's problems with scenarios. That's coming up next on the G and Ursula Show. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Normally, we would do our scenarios at this segment right now, but we're going to call an audible because we did take quite a bit of the hearing, which is still ongoing right now, the January 6th Select Committee hearing that is hearing a ex-White House aide talking. It is Cassidy Hutchinson. She was the former senior aide to Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. And in case you missed it, during the earlier part of her testimony today, she said she had had a conversation with attorney Rudy Giuliani on January 2nd, and he had asked her whether she was excited about what was going to happen on January 6th. And without giving many details, he said it was going to be a great day and that they were going to be going to the Capitol building and that he thought that President Trump was going to end up looking very powerful. And he urged Cassidy to talk to Chief Mark Meadows about it. And when she talked to Mark Meadows about it, he did not get into details, but said, yeah, Cassidy, there's a lot going on. Things might get really, really bad on January 6th. That was a quote. And so she was under questioning from Republican Representative Liz Cheney. She said that she was a little bit worried about the 6th beforehand, but that was the first night after that conversation with Rudy Giuliani. Jack, she said that she felt scared and nervous about what could happen on that day, and she had a deeper concern for the planning aspects of it. She also brought up Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, who said that he didn't want much to do with the post-election period, and he felt that it wasn't something that the White House should be getting into and was worried about the legacy of President Trump and that this whole thing could spiral out of control. And then while you and I were not taking it live, Chef was monitoring. And Chef, there was some other details that came up about weapons that were at the rally.
Yeah, well, the rally gatherers were assembling. Some of them were being kept outside the barricades because they were seen by Secret Service agents with bear spray, AR-15s. They were fashioning flagpoles into spears, you know, attaching knives to those. They were initially kept out of that rally area. The president ordered them to be allowed in, saying, quote, they're not here to hurt me. Apparently, also, the only reason the president did not march to the Capitol building with the mob of folks is he was waved off by Pat Cipollone, one of the White House attorneys, who advised him that this would be easily construed as obstruction of Congress and inciting a riot. The basic testimony here is that they're fully aware of how violent the mob would become prior to this happening. The president was initially for a week planning to attend there and go to the Capitol building.
And Jack, this is my first time actually being able to talk about this because I was gone for the last couple of weeks, and I know that you guys talked about it. But how much have you been watching or covering this hearing or these hearings? Today was a surprise hearing because they weren't planning to bring this witness, but apparently she had new information, and that's what we're getting now.
Yeah, I watch as much as I possibly can, or I read the kind of synopsis of it, or I go back and I watch the clips on YouTube. I do think, though, in watching a decent amount of it, you know, about 90, 95% of it, I do think that it's a shame that more people aren't paying attention to it. And it's a shame that there are so many people out there who are disregarding it as some kind of like Democrat power play or some kind of pitch for the 2022-2024 election seasons. Because there is a lot of very useful information out there and firsthand testimony from Trump's inner circle about his activities at that time. I think the reason that most commentators are avoiding talking about it, if you're like a conservative commentator, is because you know that the money bag, the your livelihood depends on your audience and where you sit with President Donald Trump. And it is virtually impossible, I would say, currently to be a right of center commentator or a conservative commentator and not be like a staunch Trump supporter. Otherwise, you just get excoriated. People don't want to hear it. You're a rhino. You know, they did it to Adam Kinzinger. They did it to Liz Cheney. Even their voting records are something like 95, 98% with Donald Trump's agenda.
Yeah.
So most people, I think, it's like, I wish that more people would pay attention to what's actually going on in their country.
I absolutely agree with you. And I'm actually disappointed in myself. I was dealing with a lot the last couple of weeks, so I didn't hear the first 2 days of testimony. But when I did listen, and I know that we've used the word patriot a lot, or that the word patriot has been used in certain circles. You talk about true patriots. When I was listening to the testimony of the Republican elected officials who were in charge of elections, talking about the pressure they were feeling from the former president and having to say that, you know, no, I'm going against what you're saying. I'm not going to find those votes that you're looking for. And now we've got this, you know, hey, this is a 25-year-old woman, Cassidy Hutchinson, who has been called in and is testifying. She was in the inner circle. You know, she had access to the president and to the chief of staff, and we're learning about this. And you can easily dismiss it as just, this is just a Democratic Party charade. But I have such great respect for Liz Cheney. I mean, she has lost so much support from the Republican Party because of what she's doing right now. But we should care. We should care whether if you knew that there was an effort to basically steal an election or overturn an election. I mean, regardless, that should and the levels to which it went, that should be so concerning to all of us. And we should all be paying attention. And I love the fact, I got to give you kudos, because I love the fact that you are a right of center commentator and that you do take the positions you are, because you're right. That's not where the money is.
No, it'd be a lot easier for me, Ursula, if I just went on my show every single night and just was like, Democrat bad, love Donald Trump, everything he does is phenomenal. It would be really easy, and I'm sure I'd get a lot of praise for it. I could do it on my YouTube channel as well. I just choose not to do it because I find it to be disingenuous. But again, I'm missing out on like a ton of money. So maybe I should just start saying, I love the guy. He does no wrong. He's King David. Yeah. Be a good financial investment.
I wish that people would look at it and just say, okay, let's just look at the facts of it, regardless of who is, you know, not focusing just solely on the party, but looking at these are facts. And when I talk about patriots, and if you use the word patriots, I mean, people who are really standing up for their country, regardless of party, that's who I have the greatest respect for.
Yeah.
Anyway,
absolutely.
Okay, more of the G and Ursula show coming up.